In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. In the Psalms, we hear these words. Thou hast held me by my right hand, and by thy counsel thou hast guided me, and with glory hast thou taken me to thyself. If we are trying to live a life according to God's teachings and trying to serve Him and to be guided by Him, God leads us by the right hand and His counsel guides us and He takes us to Himself in glory. This is true of not just great saints, but this is true of many individuals. I could tell you many stories in my own life about how I could see in retrospect God's providence, and I've talked to many other people who tell very many stories like that. But I'd like to talk about an example of this from the life of St. John of Shanghai. And it's a story that most people know part of it, but they don't really know the rest of the story. I just recently read a book that was published by St. Vladimir Seminary Press by John Dunlop. And the title of it is Exodus, St. John Maximovich Leads His Flock Out of Shanghai. And so it focuses on his leadership in taking the people who were in China when the communists took over and bringing them to the United States and to Australia. But mostly it focuses on the United States because I'll get into the Australia part of it, but that was a piece of it. St. John of Shanghai was born in the Kharkov region in 1896, and he came from a noble family, a family that was landed gentry. As a matter of fact, his family descended from an ancestor who came to the Russian Empire after the Turks had conquered Serbia. So they came escaping the Ottoman yoke and wanted to live in freedom and be able to practice their faith. And I'm told that they maintain the Serbian pronunciation of their last name even into the present day, because the Russians would pronounce it slightly differently than the Serbs do. But his parents put him in the Poltava Military Academy, and he was not very inclined to a military life. Archbishop Peter tells a lot of stories about St. John that he heard from his relatives, but one of the stories was that he had a set of 10 soldiers. But rather than playing military games with these soldiers, he would play monastery, and he would make one of them the abbot, and then the other ones would be the monks, and they would go and they would do services. So he was not inclined to a military life at all, but he went through this academy basically all the way through what we would call high school and graduated in 1914. And he was inclined to go to the Kiev Theological Academy because his heart was drawing him to monasticism and to a life serving the church. But his parents insisted that he go to get a law degree. So out of obedience, contrary to his own inclinations, but out of obedience, he went to the Kharkov Imperial University and he graduated with a law degree, and he just graduated right before it became impossible to graduate from that school, before the communists would have made it impossible for someone like him who was a devout believer to be able to do it. And because of all the chaos that was resulting, especially in Ukraine, in the wake of the Bolshevik Revolution, he, along with his parents, his brothers, and his sister, moved to Serbia, their ancestral homeland. And there he went to Belgrade University, and he graduated with a degree in theology. He became a seminary professor. He was made a higher deacon and then a higher monk, and then he was selected to be made a bishop and sent to Shanghai. And he served there, I think it was from 1936 up until the time that the communists took over. The communists finally took over all of China with the exception of Taiwan in 1949. But in 1948, they had almost completed the process, and so the Russians that were in China were going to the cities, especially to Shanghai, trying to find some way out. These were people who had fled communism once and were trying to flee it a second time. And he, by his influence and by his prayers, and dealing with various organizations, along with the help of other leaders in the Russian community in Shanghai, were able to finally get the agreement that these from the International Refugee Organization, which had been set up to deal with all the displaced persons after World War II, to bring them to the Philippines, because the Philippines was the only country that would agree to take them at that particular time. Back in those days, American immigration was very restrictive, and to allow anyone into the United States required literally an act of Congress. You had to have a law that allowed people to come in, because they had shut off immigration, I believe, in the 1920s because of the Depression, and this didn't really change until the 1960s. So nearly 5,500 people wound up on this island in the Philippines, and when they got there, there had been some sort of a military base, but there was very little of it that was still functional, so they basically had to set up tents, set up kitchens, eventually they set up church, and they had some kind of a life there, but it was very difficult because these were not people from tropical climates that were suddenly on this island. And also, this island was known to be in Hurricane Alley, basically, or Typhoon, I guess is what they call it in the Pacific, Typhoon Alley. But the entire time that these refugees were there, they were protected because by St. John's prayers. So St. John traveled to the United States. Well, I should tell you the Australian part of this. The refugee organization, they had offers from Australia that they would bring people there. But Australia's terms were very restrictive. They would not allow entire families to go. They mainly wanted strong young men who were healthy, and they also required them to sign a work agreement that was basically a blank check. They were agreeing to work for whoever the government told them to work, and to do so for 2 years. And a lot of people, because they were in such difficult situations on this island, went ahead and agreed, so you have many people that went to Australia from this island, but a lot of people didn't want to break up their families. And another thing that was difficult about it was even people who had advanced educations were basically being told that they would have a job digging ditches in Australia, and a lot of people in those situations didn't think that was the best use of their skills, and so they were holding out hope that they would be able to come to the United States. So St. John traveled to the United States, and the way I've often heard this story told, which is not accurate, is that St. John basically just sat on the Capitol steps and people saw this holy man and they were influenced to pass this law. But he arrived there in 1949 and he began to lobby. He was working with other Russians, and he, along with the dean of the Holy Trinity Seminary in Jordanville, appeared before a Senate subcommittee. The House passed an amendment to the Displaced Persons Act that would have accommodated the Russians on this island, as well as about 1,000 more people who were still in China that they were wanting to get out of China. But the Senate, there were people who were blocking this. There were many people who were anti-immigration. And so he appeared before the Senate subcommittee. This languished in this committee for quite some time. And St. John stayed on top of it. He was talking to different senators on a regular basis. There were changes that were proposed to the law that would have opened it up to where the number of places for people might have been taken by people who are not Russian if the language of the law had not been worded very specifically. And St. John stayed on top of this at every step. Finally, the Senate passed the bill on Holy Thursday, 1950. And then it went to reconciliation because the House had passed a different bill than the Senate had passed. So it went to a reconciliation committee. And it took quite some time and some doing to make sure that the law didn't get messed up in the reconciliation committee. Finally, it was signed by Harry Truman on June of 1950. How was St. John able to stay on top of all of this process? How was he able to understand the arcane rules of the Senate and our American laws? He had a law degree. He was a lawyer. He didn't know he was going to need that skill, but God knew he was going to need that skill. And as a matter of fact, even his military training came into play because he was essentially waging a strategic war on many fronts. He had to bring these people to the Philippines. Then he had to arrange for them to come to the United States. There were people, there were units who were trying to use the circumstances to put these refugees into situations where they could convert them to unitism. And so on all these different fronts, he was having to wage a war. And God had prepared him for this unique circumstance. No one could have foreseen back in 1914 when he agreed to go to law school that all of that would come into play. But God knew. God will lead us by his right hand. He'll lead us by our right hand if we will just simply look to him and trust him. And there are many situations in life where you might say, why is this happening? Why is it not happening the way I think that it ought to happen? St. John could have said, why am I not being allowed to go to the Kiev Theological Academy? I'd like to become a monk in the Laura. This would seem to be the most God-pleasing path for him. But God had another path for him. And it's only in retrospect that we can see these things. It's kind of like, I don't know if they still allow people to do this anymore, but when I was a kid, you could sit in the back of a truck, in the bed of the truck, without being seat-belted and drive down the highway. Well, I remember my father driving me around many times, and I was sitting on the bed of that truck, and I could only see where we had been. I couldn't see where we were going, but by seeing where we had been, I could kind of tell where we were going. But primarily, it was looking retrospectively. But, you know, I wasn't worried about it because I knew my father was going to take me in the right direction. And that's the attitude that we need to have, is that our Father is driving. And we can only see what has happened. We don't get to see the future. But we know he's going to take us where we need to be. And if we trust him, he will lead us by the right hand, and we will rest with him in glory. Amen.